JPMorgan Chase, Google, and Starbucks are all competitors in the same business, mobile payments. They're pouring millions of dollars into smartphone wallets, even though consumers are still reaching for their leather ones.
There's been this enormous race among technology companies like Apple and Google, retailers like Walmart especially, and then all these big banks, not just JPMorgan Chase, but Wells Fargo, Bank of America, Citigroup, and Regionals, trying to figure out how do we help consumers pay for transactions in person using their phone.
Everyone and their mom has a payment app that they're trying to push you to use. It's kind of a mess.
Mobile payments have been around for as long as smartphones have been around. But if you look at adoption in the U.S., it's not that big. In the past year, only about 1 out of every 4 Americans has used a mobile wallet or made a mobile payment.
This episode, we look at societies where people leave the house without a wallet and why we're still far from this becoming a reality in the U.S.
The Future of Everything, a look ahead from the Wall Street Journal, with Jennifer Strong.
All right, so you have any advice on what we should eat?
Do you guys like spicy?
Very, very, very spicy.
Okay. You can get the Hui Guo Rou. That's a really spicy pork. Is it too much spice? I mean, it's a Sichuan restaurant.
I'm at a Chinese restaurant in Midtown Manhattan with my colleague Aaron Back. He writes about banks and financial companies for the Wall Street Journal's Heard on the Street column. He spent 9 years working in China, so he takes the lead on ordering lunch.
鱼香芥了,可以。鱼香芥拿一个,鱼香茄子。对,两个都要。包括米饭吗?包括米饭。Okay. I messed up one of the dishes. That's all right.
You're forgiven.
During Back's time reporting in China, he watched its consumer culture transform from a cash-based economy to one that's walletless.
When I first arrived in Beijing, it was 2007. At that time, it was mostly a cash economy. Personal checks never existed in China. Credit cards, very low penetration in China. You paid cash at restaurants. I used to pay my rent in cash to my landlord. And when I showed up to rent my apartment, I had to pay like 3 months' deposit. So I had to bring like a shoebox of cash to pay my deposit. And people would travel with like a purse full of cash when they went around the country.
But online shopping changed the country's cash economy. Alibaba is China's, and by some measures, the world's biggest e-commerce company. As business grew, it needed a way to handle money.
So they developed this Alipay system, which is kind of similar to PayPal. The key feature is that it had a kind of escrow where you had to certify that you were happy with what you got, and then the funds were released to the seller. That was really important because China's kind of a low-trust society. There's a lot of scams. A lot of people are afraid of getting ripped off. So the fact that Alibaba was able to develop this very secure payment system really showed people the potential, you know, made people feel safe not using cash.
Once Alipay built trust, another payment service came in and pushed mobile payments into more people's hands.
What really turbocharged it was the development of WeChat Pay. So WeChat Pay is built around Tencent, which is the sort of biggest Chinese social network. It's really the ubiquitous app that all Chinese people use to chat and socialize. And so WeChat Pay became a payment service kind of attached to WeChat. And so the early applications for WeChat Pay were very person-to-person, very mobile, very social. It was extremely useful for splitting checks and things like that. They developed a very fun app for you to give hongbao or red envelopes to people around Chinese New Year. So now today, it's pretty much a duopoly between Alipay and WeChat Pay.
These platforms transformed online life in China. People shop, watch live video, and text without ever leaving them. And the apps transform pedestrian life in China, too. People pay for everything with their phones, groceries, food delivery, and bike shares.
Today, you know, in 2018, it's to the point where street musicians and beggars have QR codes. Because, you know, in Beijing, Shanghai, Shenzhen, big metropolitan cities, people have basically stopped carrying cash entirely.
You know where else I saw that this year?
Where?
New Orleans.
Really?
Yeah. The fortune teller was taking Venmo. But there was also a woman playing violin who was taking Venmo.
Yep.
A lot of people in the U.S. have embraced peer-to-peer payment apps like Venmo as a way to solicit money and tips. But in China, Alipay and WeChat Pay are so ubiquitous, they have even started seeping into U.S. tourism. Hotels, luxury clothing stores, and taxis in Las Vegas and New York are catering to customers with Chinese bank accounts.
At this restaurant that we're at right now, they have a sign outside saying they accept Alipay.
Now, we can't pay our bill with Alipay, but if we could, how would it work?
How it would work is they just bring you basically a piece of paper with a QR code, which is kind of almost like a barcode, and you just scan that code with your phone to pay the bill. And that's it. That's the whole process.
So no waiting for your card to be picked up and brought back to you and paperwork to fill out, etc.
Yeah, exactly. It's a very streamlined process.
Streamline is not how you'd describe the state of mobile payments here, even though, and perhaps because, there are so many options to choose from.
PayPal, Visa Checkout, Amazon Pay, Apple Pay, Samsung Pay, MasterPass, Facebook, Chase Pay, Square.
Emily Glazer is a banking reporter at the Wall Street Journal. She says everyone from Google to Starbucks is throwing resources towards mobile wallet technology.
There's just so much money being poured into these different apps and all these different sectors. Banking, credit card companies, retailers, technology firms, but consumers aren't really using it just yet.
In 2016, Chinese consumers spent $9 trillion in mobile payments. In the U.S., that number was only a few hundred billion.
And so now we're trying to figure out why that is, and the companies are trying to figure out what's going on and how they can be as relevant as possible.
Why aren't Americans using mobile wallets? One theory is there aren't systemic problems here pushing them ahead. Remember, the mobile payment revolution happened in China because people were schlepping around shoeboxes of cash. Jennifer Piepsack is CEO of card services at Chase.
The market dynamics are, of course, very different in Asia than they are in Europe versus Australia. And for lots of reasons, those markets are in many ways ahead of the U.S. in terms of cashless.
When it comes to the tech of how we pay for stuff, the U.S. often lags behind other economically powerful countries. Many Americans still use checks to pay for rent. And credit card chips only became common a couple years ago. Contactless or tap-and-go credit cards have been slow to take off, too.
The swipe wasn't broken, so a customer wasn't necessarily looking for or in need of a better solution to the swipe.
While mobile payments have perks, like rewards that replace the coffee punch card, they're mostly just a shell for a credit card. If a Chase card is linked to a coffee chain's app, Chase is still making money. In other words, the company didn't develop Chase Pay because it was worried about its credit card business. This is about marketing. If customers stop using plastic cards, Chase Pay is supposed to remind them who they're trusting with their hard-earned money.
We have to be able to innovate to find ways to keep our brand top of mind, because in this dynamic, our brand is moving into the background for our customers when they're pulling their card out of their wallet less and less, and they actually have their card embedded, whether it's an app or on file.
But there is a type of mobile payment that might have Chase worried. Worried enough to collaborate with its biggest competitors, Bank of America, Capital One, U.S. Bank, BB&T, PNC, and Wells Fargo. Together, they created Zelle to compete with the popular peer-to-peer payment app, Venmo. Again, The Wall Street Journal's Emily Glazer.
More and more consumers began using it, and the banks realized that they didn't want to just be connected through the back end. They really wanted to have their own systems, their own compliance, their own controls.
Zelle is estimated to outnumber Venmo users by the end of 2018. But it makes sense that Venmo is the leading social payments app because it's owned by PayPal, the original peer-to-peer payments platform, invented before the smartphone. Dan Schulman is the company's president and CEO. He says Venmo isn't just popular, it's popular with a coveted demographic, the one that starts with an M.
You look at applications like Venmo, which is really a social payment application for more of the millennial generation. And you see them using that app 4 to 5 times a week. It's growing.
Overall, person-to-person payments are expected to double in the next 5 years, but in-store payments are lagging behind.
What's holding it back is you have a lot of infrastructure that's in place in the U.S., strong point-of-sale terminals that accept credit cards, but mobile is changing the face of retail.
It's no secret that brick-and-mortar retail is taking a hit from people shopping online.
And more retailers are understanding that the distinction between online and in-store is going away, and that mobile is the dominant device where people are beginning and ending their shopping journeys. And so they're beginning to write applications that encourage people to use their mobile phone for their shopping experience. And digital payments is embedded in those applications. And as more and more of retail moves to understanding that the mobile phone can allow them to have a much more intimate relationship with their customer, I think you're going to naturally see digital payments explode in the U.S.
Once everything goes digital, there will also be a digital record of everything we buy. That information is valuable to businesses. When a user pays someone for dinner with the sushi emoji, Venmo collects that data. Privacy is something U.S. consumers are more worried about than those in mobile-forward China. But none of these issues have stopped other countries from ditching the physical wallet.
M-Pesa is a mobile-to-mobile phone payment system that was developed here in Kenya and piloted here for the first time in late 2007, early 2008. The original intention was actually quite experimental and a little out there.
Matina Stevis-Gridneff is the Wall Street Journal's correspondent in Africa, where most people don't have bank accounts.
People who want to praise African economies call it leapfrogging. They say that Africa has leapfrogged traditional banking systems. That might sound cool, but then if they've leapfrogged that, what is there? Well, until the late thousands, not much was there other than cash.
Cash, of course, is not the best way to handle money. It was hard for families to transfer money across villages, and it wasn't safe. It also meant people had a hard time saving and keeping a ledger of what they had.
What that translated to was persistent poverty, was that people were not able to transact for simple things like buying fruit and vegetables, but they also were cut out of a whole host of financial services that we take for granted, like applying for a small business loan to set up a shop, like applying for a mortgage to finally buy a house for their families.
Kenyans couldn't access cash. This was a problem in a country where breadwinners often travel to cities to work and send money to family in rural areas. But Vodafone, a telecommunications company, had an idea. If cell phones connect people across satellites, why can't they connect them financially, too? It created M-Pesa and set up kiosks across the country where cash could be deposited and withdrawn. The cell phone acts as a sort of debit card, sending money by SMS to people or businesses.
The M-Pesa interface looks like something out of the 90s. At the same time, it was incredibly intuitive in its simplicity, and people loved it.
Stevis-Gridneff uses M-Pesa along with more than half of Kenya, 26 million people. She went to her local market in Nairobi to show us it's as easy as sending a text message.
We've just arrived at my local little shopping area. There's a small petrol station, a small supermarket, a grocery, and my favorite florist. His name is Chris. Hey, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
All good, thank you. Yeah. So, what do you have for me today? I see you've got loads of roses.
Yes.
What is the name of these ones?
These are called Onis.
Yeah. These small white little flowers. Let's get one of those. Now let's find something with a bit of color to throw in there. How about these dark red ones?
Yeah, these are called chrysanthemum.
If you can put it in plastic for me, please. Nice one, sawa, Santa Sana. 650 Kenyan shillings, and that is roughly $6.50.
Yes.
And you can take M-Pesa?
Yes, yes.
So I'm just on my smartphone. I'm opening up the M-Pesa app. Can you tell me your number?
Okay, 0726-973-460.
And then I press done. The next screen asks me for my PIN. It's a four-digit PIN, and I punch it in. And I immediately get a confirmation. So have you received it now?
Yes, I've received it.
Excellent. Thank you.
For the U.S. to embrace mobile payments like Kenya and China, different types of institutions, like doctor's offices and real estate companies, need to accept them. The mobile wallet must replace everything in a wallet, not just a credit card. Peter Rudiger, who writes about fintech for the Wall Street Journal, says we're already seeing a bit of that happening.
You know, your wallet isn't just for your card, it's for your ID, it's for your MetroCard here in New York. So, you know, the MTA has announced that in a few years you can start using wallets like Apple Pay to scan at the subway to get in instead of swiping that card. So as more functions beyond just payments move to mobile phones, move to the cloud, I think that will kind of help jumpstart it.
Technology is even challenging the very definition of the mobile wallet. The Apple Watch has Apple Pay. The first Amazon Go store opened this year in Seattle, where shoppers never visit a register. Alexa can purchase items by voice activation, and users may soon be able to use it to send money to friends and family. Smart devices like refrigerators can order milk when it senses it's low.
And then you have kind of the next-gen technologies like, you know, VR and facial recognition and all that kind of stuff. If you're in a VR game and you blink twice or whatever the kind of method is that you say it is, that you're going to be able to pay for stuff or pay for virtual goods.
One day, we might ditch smart wallets altogether.
In facial recognition, is it going to read your lips and say that I want to pay for this? Is it going to see you nod? There's any kind of gesture that you can attach to this is a way we're going to start paying for things. Maybe it'll be something like if you just make the signal for a swipe a card with your hand, like that's enough to say, okay, we're going to charge this person for it.
And all of these industry changes could influence the way we look at money itself.
One thing that digitizing payments allows you to do is make currencies out of things that weren't currencies before. You know, honestly, anything can become a currency.
In our next episode, we explore state-sponsored code breaking and what constitutes an act of war in the digital age. The Future of Everything is a production of The Wall Street Journal. This episode was produced by Kristen Schwab, with help from Peter Rudiger, Matina Stevis-Gridneff, Emily Glazer, and Aaron Back. Our technical director is Jacob Gorski. John Wardock is the executive producer of WSJ Podcasts. Stan Parrish is the editor-in-chief of The Future of Everything. Thanks for listening. I'm Jennifer Strong in the newsroom in New York.